Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
It's a pretty good Twitter bio. Your favorite host, favorite host.
That's right. How you should end every show. I'm your favorite host. We'll back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Craig Button will be back in a moment. He'll be dragging Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider, in studio with him. Get into a number of things throughout the NHL, including what's going on down in Carolina. Ron Francis out as the new GM will be announced at some point, and the new owner has decided he's going to be hands-on, and he wants to kind of be the Mark Cuban or Jerry Jones of the NHL. Jordan Eberle returning to Edmonton tonight, and Eberle, that trade is it's one that hangs around the neck of Peter Chiarelli, the GM out there. It's behind the Hall trade.
No kidding.
And I think it's behind the Lucic signing. But it's probably number three. You know, Chris Russell takes a lot of heat. Maybe the Chris Russell contract, he takes so much heat from the analytics crowd and his underlying numbers. But the Jordan Eberle deal has not looked that good.
Yeah, it's crazy how you're watching it and you're like, we have to move forward. And Hall and Eberle, they're not a part of what we want going forward. But guess what the personnel, the team kind of need right now?
They need scoring outside of McDavid.
Scoring, skating, speedy wingers.
Yeah, that's what they're going to try to acquire this upcoming summer. Like, they're going to try to get better on defense, which is what they were supposed to do with some of these trades and some of these signings. And Edmonton is going to try to improve on the wing and get more skill and get more speed. Meanwhile, they shipped out the players that they shipped out, and they brought in the guys that
some
they did.
Some of it was coming down to money, too. I mean,
well, McDavid's getting paid, and his deal kicks in, and Draisaitl's deal kicked in. But you didn't have to sign Lucic to that contract.
No.
And that's burning them already. And there's a couple of other dollars that have been spent on players that just simply haven't worked out.
If you remember a few years back, we had Mike Fuda on from the LA Kings, and we asked him about Lucic. I did. I said, is it kind of a weird spot where you maybe like him for one more year, but not beyond that? And I think in a roundabout way, he said, that's kind of in the position we basically are, where we're not going to commit to that long term.
And they didn't. And Edmonton did. And Lucic, I love the way he plays. I love the way he used to play. But he can't keep up. You know, this new game in the NHL, it's about speed and it's about skill. Look at Vegas. They are the best example of a front office having a read on where the game is today and where the game is going. Vegas, almost everyone they acquired was skillful and could skate more than anything else. Yeah. There were a couple of guys who aren't the fastest guys in the league. James Neal's not the fastest guy.
There's a lot of guys that are hitting home runs this year.
That probably won't ever again.
Riley Smith, William Karlsson.
Yeah, Marchessault. So that's the best. One of the best lines in the league is in Vegas. William Karlsson has like 35 goals. Riley Smith has been one of the best players in the league. He's a good player. Like, he had good years in Boston, in Florida. He's not this good. Like, he's not to this caliber.
It's one of the things I'm sure they're going to deal with this year, Brian, and say, we got to ride this out and see where this takes us.
Yeah.
But don't you almost have to be cautionary going into next year, thinking, all of these guys can't play like this again? Or can you even think like that as an executive? Well, I don't think you can.
I think you have to believe in the skill set the players have. Maybe not the production. Like, you can't sit there and pencil in William Karlsson for 40 next year because he's going to do it this year.
No.
But that doesn't mean he's going to score 10. You know, you have to believe that he's a guy who can perennially put up 25 goals, 30 goals. You know, and maybe Riley Smith is truly a top six. Maybe he's not like all-star level, you know, borderline top four or five wingers in the league the way he's played this year. But that doesn't mean he has to be relegated to a third or fourth line position. But, you know, as for Edmonton, again, it's there's just been too many trades that Peter Chiarelli has made throughout his career that just constantly come back up. Like, he traded Hall, Eberle, Kessel, Sagan, Blake Wheeler. You go over the list, like, it's crazy what he's traded away and never got the return.
Yeah.
Never got the return.
Well, think of the Sagan trade. Got Erickson back, who who had a couple good years in Boston, but you're not even talking about the same.
No. The Phil deal was a good deal.
But
in
you
retrospect.
Know what? When
the Kessel
you're an organization,
deal.
When you're an NHL organization, and I'm pretty sure, I mean, I'm not an insider, I'm not Bobby Mack, I'm not Darren Dreger, but there was a feeling in Edmonton where they thought that Taylor Hall's attitude was not something they wanted to deal with.
And Eberle, I think, was a part of that, too.
Yeah, so they were like, okay, you're leaving here.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really care what we get back.
But that's
not,
the
not
problem.
That they, not that they don't care, but they just wanted them out, and they're going to take what they can get.
And the other teams knew that, and they took advantage of that. And credit New Jersey and New York, who were like, we know you're getting rid of these guys. You do not want to show up at camp with these two players.
That's right. So this is what we
have
to offer.
This is what we can give you. But that's terrible management. Like, you can't do that. You can't give off that vibe. Like, this is where, in retrospect, I'll credit Ottawa.
I agree.
Ottawa.
In management, you can't give off the vibe that you want to move away from a player because everyone's going to say, well...
We'll fleece you.
Yeah.
Like, Ottawa's going to deal with this with Carlson. Like, they have to hold strong. They have to. You can't go to the draft and
wouldn't
be like, he's got to leave
if you're Pierre
week.
Dorion, wouldn't you wish that there was no talk about Carlson
yes.
at all?
Yes.
And all of a sudden, at the draft, you just flip a note to all the GMs and say... Any interest?
And guess what would come? It would be crazy, the amount of responses.
Yeah. But the whole idea that you want him out or he's not re-signing there? Can't do it.
No, you can't. Darren Dreger and Craig Button will join us back in studio in just a moment. I got to get to this Royals story. So the Kansas City Royals, everyone's going through spring training throughout the bigs right now. And they're down in Arizona, I believe. And... They got their minor league players in a room and hired a consulting company, an advocacy company, to come in and speak to their minor league players about the dangers of pornography addiction. These players were sitting in the room while...
Is this serious?
This is dead serious. This happened yesterday, I believe, and the advocacy group that is anti-porn... posted it on Instagram of the players sitting there looking remarkably uncomfortable. And they went in there, and the GM has spoken about it. The GM, Dayton Moore in Kansas City, has, I guess, is concerned. But I want to know why he is so concerned. Like, what has he seen in that clubhouse in Kansas City that has led him to believe he needs a seminar for players?
I'll be brutally honest with you. I've spoken to somebody about this. It's okay to look at porn, but you can't be doing it 24 hours a day.
Well, addiction is real. Like, listen, as much as there is some funny material that can come out of this...
It's just the honest truth.
No, it's the truth. Like, as much as I want to joke about this, and we probably will in the coming minutes, I will say this. It's not any different than an organization having someone coming in and speaking of the dangers of
drugs, over,
of drugs drinking, who you meet, who you interact with. Like, it happens. You've been in those camps. They happen in every sport, before training camp or during training camp.
I've been through all the meetings. You can't do this, you can't do that, which is all true.
But porn addiction is not, it's not at the forefront of the discussion in society right now. Because nobody admits to it. Like, people, if someone's got a drinking problem, you're like, that guy's got it. You can pick up on the signs. You know what I'm saying? Unless there are people within the clubhouse, like players in the clubhouse, who are constantly... Like
watching
on porn sites and watching porn. How did the GM get to a point where he was so concerned that this is an issue within his organization?
Well, it's not funny because there's addictions and they're all real. You just said it.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine like coming off after a shift saying, I got to go get a new stick in the background and you just fire up Brazzers for 4 minutes and then come back and say, I'm ready.
In between innings, you're like, I'm just going to go back into the clubhouse for a second and jump online and. Like, maybe with Wi-Fi access and stuff, maybe the GM or the team is, like, tracking it. But they didn't invite the big league players. And I have a theory as to why, because I think the big leaguers would have been like, are you kidding me? I'm not doing that. Like, I'm not doing that. There's no way I'm showing up for this kind of seminar. Get the kids to go if you want. But I got a guaranteed contract with $120 million left. I'm not sitting during this. But, you know, you there have been a lot of ball players in the past with inexcusable... off the rocker social media conduct where they're following accounts that you just shouldn't be following.
The guy was coaching the Knicks that like bigass.com or something.
Yeah, that was who was
Rambis.
That again? Yeah, it was Rambis, Kurt Rambis.
He was bigbooty.com all over the place.
Right. There was a player I want to say in Houston that his likes were so outrageously offside.
I
you can't, like there's no excuse for that anymore in the social media world. Like 10 years ago when we were
liking
just getting
things by, I've had to call a colleague saying, excuse me, your likes are off the charts.
An HR nightmare. An HR nightmare.
But the excuse back was, I didn't even know I liked it.
See, that's the thing. No one
but
can
I
claim
think if you're creeping
anymore.
Around bigbooty.com and there's multiple likes, you're around bigbooty.com.
Right. Like maybe the occasional accidental like. Craig's back in here. But following.
Craig's
walking
segue.
Into a storm here. But like again, 10 years ago on Facebook when no one knew how it worked. I can understand if you posted something. Well, Anthony Weiner did that multiple times. Posted stuff, didn't realize that the whole world
wiener.
Could see it. Anthony Weiner posting pics of his wiener online, didn't understand that it was accessible to everybody. And I could understand the ignorance there to an extent.
Phil Craig in. We're talking about the Kansas City Royals.
Oh, okay.
Did you hear about this?
Yeah, I did.
The anti-pornography.
But if I'm a GM,
seminar?
I'd be warned. Like, obviously, I guess you got to warn somebody about porn addiction, but. I would be thinking more like, here comes
Dregs. Here's Dregs. Get him in here, too, as the insider. Maybe
we're
he's got more insight information.
Here, buddy.
Now, this is a legit story, though. Like, this happened, and the GM of the Kansas City Royals came out and spoke on it and said he's trying to help his young players from avoiding what is becoming an issue within society.
Porn addiction.
That's right.
I can't imagine if I was the GM of a team to one of the first few meetings of the season saying, watch out for that porn. It'll get you.
I guess it happens. It's just a matter of time before it happens in the NHL, right, Craig? You don't think so?
They don't even want to talk to
they,
us.
They don't want to go down that road.
I have no idea.
This is
no, I know. They don't even want to talk to us.
This is not fake news, though. Yeah. Like, just for the record,
no,
this
I know.
Is not
just,
fake news.
I mean...
This is real life stuff.
Well, isn't there a country that established some sort of tax?
On what?
I was reading about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, on
yeah,
if you watch porn... You've got to pay an additional $20
right.
or something
it's
like
that. It's like a $20 access fee.
I would have moved.
You're out of there. I need to get you in this seminar.
This addiction is not costing me one more penny.
No, yeah. No chance.
For sale?
The Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance It. I'm sure
Let's
they're glad
to
be a part of it.
Some hardcore hockey talk.
So somebody is trying to tax it?
I saw that on social media
guys,
earlier today, and I may not.
When I'm saying let's move away from this,
yeah, it's
let's
time
move
to move away. Listen,
but how do they know you're watching porn?
They know everything.
They're keeping tabs.
Big Brother watches everything. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Watch yourself, Craig.
I thought maybe they put something in your eyes so when the porn comes up, like
you guys know that. You guys know, as my friends, if anything ever happens to me, there's only one thing to worry about.
Get rid of your phones.
History.
Delete my history.
Not my finances. Not where my money is.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Just delete history.
Just clean out the whole system.
No, you just go to Lake Ontario. Throw my. Anything,
phone, iPad,
all of it, one shot in a bag, Lake Ontario.
Call in the cleaner. I'll be Harvey Keitel.
I'm being dead serious.
Harvey okay. Keitel.
Call someone
Pulp
and
Fiction.
Say, "Where is this stuff? My computer bag," and throw it in Lake Ontario.
I don't know what happened.
That's your only
to that.
Responsibility as my friend.
All right, I'll do it for you, buddy.
Do it.
I'll take care of you.
But that's a lifelong promise, Brian.
Yeah.
Oh, like it's not just
you guys
end of the week.
50
like,
years
yeah.
I'm
going to
be doing that.
Oh, no, we know you're
get
not kidding.
Yeah.
We get it.
We're talking about these conversations happening throughout the league about goaltenders being fatigued. And Andre Vasilevsky came out and said, yeah, I'm a little bit tired right now. Freddie Anderson, though, went the opposite way. He doesn't even want to be asked about it. He's like, leave me alone. I'm fine. I'm good to go. But their
it's
stats
like the rest
have been
of the league, Brian. Darren, aren't we in a situation now? And Craig, you can give me your two cents. There's not enough good goalies to play in the league, and we're expanding.
No,
there is not enough good goalies in the league.
Well, it depends.
Think about
what,
that.
Yeah, I mean that's a fair point, but based on what comparison? You know,
like everybody wants a 2B. There's not enough 2Bs out there.
Right. You know, if you're talking about Vasilevsky, if you're talking about Freddie Anderson, if you're talking about Carey Price at the top of his game, that's a tough comparison to make. But I look, we just talked about Connor Hellebuyck of the Winnipeg Jets. I'm okay with him. You know, whether he's inching towards the elite level, time will tell. But I can, to O's point, for the teams that don't have a number one, regardless of where he fits in that lineup, they're desperate to find him. I mean, look at the Islanders as an example.
Yeah, right. Like, who the hell are they going to go get? Unless they make a trade for Carey Price,
Yeah, who the hell's going to be the goalie for the New York Islanders that's going to be any good?
Well, that's to your point, Jeff. And I think when you look around the league and you look at teams that go, okay, goaltending would really help their team, you start to go, okay, great, we know you identify the problem. Where is the solution?
Yeah, somebody's going to take a flyer on Robin Lehner again, right?
I would think
who
so.
Who in the hell would do that?
That's tough.
I know, but any team that has sketchy goaltending or is just hoping that this guy finally gets it.
And you always take a chance. You look at Devin Dubnyk, what he did in Minnesota. Yeah. This guy turned into a guy there. It's been nominated for a couple of Vezinas. There's always that chance.
But look back to Edmonton. He actually had some good season in Edmonton. Edmonton dropped the ball on Devin Dubnyk.
Shocking. Shocking that Edmonton would do that.
And you know, they, you know, again, they drafted him in the first round. It took time for him to get there, and then he had that season. It wasn't very good. It was bad for everybody. And then, boom, he's out.
Yeah. But, you know, to your point, you look around the league, and there are teams that you know, have some issues in goal. You know, if Corey Crawford doesn't get healthy in Chicago, the Hawks have nothing coming. Nothing. Like, where is the goaltending coming there? Ottawa is going through a rebuild / renovation. You know, they have Craig Anderson and Mike Condon under contract for next year. They almost have no choice but to bring those guys back because they're immovable. So what are you going to do?
And that's why
isn't
the
it amazing
for
how
Philip
they went
Gustafson
from so awesome
was
to
so important for them, right?
Yes.
Because he's playing in the Elite League in the SHL in Luleå.
And he'll play there again next year.
Well, he might be ready to come. Yeah. Probably another year wouldn't hurt him, but they now have a guy that's 20 years old in the system, right? Yeah. Which is important.
That's Ottawa, you're saying?
Philip Gustafson. Yeah. That they traded in a Brassard deal?
Well, could they be in a situation where they're going to just be openly tanking next year, Ottawa? Like, if they trade Carlson and they
hand get over in the Jack Hughes sweepstakes?
Yeah, like, if they hand over the pick to Colorado this year, why wouldn't they tank? Like, they're basically tanking anyway. If you trade Carlson and you're bringing back this kind of goaltending and you're not going to spend money.
But that's going to be a curious day, draft day, as it always is, but specific to Ottawa and what they do with that pick, because Craig knows this better than any of us at this table. You know, if Ottawa's in the top five, then they'll hold the pick. That's my belief.
You kind of have to, don't
kinda
you?
Kind of have to. If you get dipped to 7-8, then it gets a little bit dicey. Right now you're talking about a significant gamble. So a lot of those decisions could be made as early as the draft lottery when you find out where you're positioned.
Craig, where would you stand on that?
No, I agree with Darren. I think that, you know.
So if it's five, you're keeping it?
Yeah, for me, you got Dahlin, and then you got the three forwards, and then it gets a little bit interesting. You know, you got Quinn Hughes, you got Adam Bukvist, but you mean there might be some other. But now, and the challenge for Ottawa is if let's say they give up the seventh pick. Let's just say they give up the seventh pick, and then next year they, you know, they keep their pick, and it's not, and that player turns out to be Mark Scheifele.
Which so, happens.
And it does happen. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. So this is no easy analysis or assessment for the Ottawa Senators. So I agree. You know, you start to get down, not so much about where the players, where the line is between the players. You start to go, okay, we know what we're getting.
Yeah.
Let's just get it.
Yeah.
Well, it's a bad scene in Ottawa.
Oh, it is.
And we were talking about Edmonton and Eberle making his return tonight, and that's a trade that hangs around the neck of Peter Chiarelli. Like, it just hasn't worked out. And I know it was partially because of finances. They couldn't pay all these guys, and you got to pay McDavid, and you got to pay Dreisaitl. But it just, that hasn't worked.
It hasn't,
that deal hasn't worked.
But that's a legit point, right? I mean, it was as much a salary dump as it was, you know, anything else. And, you know, in fairness to Chiarelli, not that I need to defend him, if you want to analyze that deal from, what, January to this point, in fact, I think Ryan Strom is outpointing Jordan Eberle. He is. So, Strom in the bigger picture isn't the player that Jordan Eberle is.
Tree. We just talked about Chiarelli's trade.
Well, I don't think
history.
He's done a great job. Like, I just don't think it hasn't gone well.
He's just had some doozies, man. You're talking about trading Tyler Seguin, Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, signing Lucic.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't.
Well, and the Kessel deal, which turned into Tyler Seguin, which then turned into another deal.
That was a good deal.
Yeah.
Like, that was good value for Phil. Phil's a really good player and has been, but that was good value.
Yeah.
But just looking at Edmonton alone, I mean.
See, the Hall trade stinks. Now, because,
especially right now,
because Taylor Hall has come into his own. But in fairness, again, you know, and I don't want to beat up on this guy because he doesn't deserve it anymore. You know, and Evander Kane made that point after trade deadline on Monday, where can we stop talking about what happened 3-4 years ago? And I believe in that. So in saying that, and I'm not comparing Hall to Evander Kane, but, you know, Evander Kane maybe did have some maturity issues when he was with the Edmonton Oilers, and maybe that impacted his game. There was some recklessness in how he played, but not anymore. I mean, he's matured. Both on and off the ice. And he wasn't a bad kid in any way, shape, or form. But as a hockey player, man, now you see what you were drafting. Right?
First overall,
It takes time for that to materialize. And I remember Shirelli telling me around that trade, he wasn't getting any better offers. He needed to improve his defense. And Adam Larson from the New Jersey Devils was the best offer option that he had for Taylor Hall. He took it. Now he looks foolish, but then it wasn't so bad.
Well, and last year it wasn't so bad.
No.
They ended up with 104 points and went to Game 7 in the second round. And
well, yeah, it's come to a forefront this year. Yeah. Taylor Hall's being talked about in the Hart Trophy conversation.
I couldn't be more impressed with him.
With Hall?
Nah, hey, just
been
again. Look, I mean, he went through a lot of stuff in Edmonton, but this kid is just a hockey player.
Yeah, he's rolling, man. I think he's got a shot at being nominated, considering when he's going on this run.
Absolutely.
I think if he was on this run in October and November, we'd forget about it by the end of the year.
I think he's grown as a player, too. Watching him play.
Yeah.
I used to watch him play at Edmonton and think to myself, you're going to get yourself killed up
100%.
There.
100%.
All you do is skate around 100 miles an hour, and you're going to get run over by somebody. But he has an understanding now of what his skill set is and how he can succeed on the ice. And unfortunately, it didn't happen for the Oilers.
No, and it looks like Jersey's probably going to hold on. I mean, there's a bit of a race, but they're in a pretty good spot to make it as a wild card.
But not to beat up on the Oilers any further, but let's beat up on the Oilers a little bit more. You know, so look at the issues that they face now moving forward, right? So they're still looking for that winger to play with Connor McDavid. Well, how are you getting that piece? You know, you're hoping that you can, excuse me, add an Oliver Ekman-Larsson. How? How are you making that trade? You know, it's going to be Nugent Hopkins or Puljujärvi, who they're still kind of experimenting with. How are you acquiring those pieces without further digging a hole?
I think they've realized that Draisaitl's got to play with McDavid, so how the hell can you get rid of Nugent Hopkins? Because somebody's going to play in the second line.
I know. I don't think he can. And you'd like to add a goalie, speaking of goaltenders, who can give Cam Talbot a little kick in the pants to get him more dialed in.
And they have no goalie coming in the system. They have no top four defensemen coming in the system. You know, the Oilers built their team on the wing with Hall and Eberle and all these guys. Now they have three centers, and now they don't have wingers.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been an unmitigated disaster for 13 years. It's like 06 is when they went. I mean, they're an unmitigated disaster.
Yeah.
And I know Peter Chiarelli kind of has got but their drafting was terrible. I mean, it's just,
mess.
You know, earlier on this year, there was talk about would they trade Klefbom for a winger? You're going like, really?
Yeah.
You trade Hall to get a defenseman. Now you're going to trade a defenseman to get a winger?
Go around in circles.
It's all bad drafting.
Yep. All right, Dregs. Good stuff, man.
Hey, guys.
Here's Darren Dreger, a hockey insider, brought to you by Finance. Add a payment plan to your tool belt and break down large price tags into easy, affordable payments with Finance.
And watch what you're doing online, Darren.
Yeah. Watch yourself. We're watching.
Yeah.
We're
going to
be on top
of
these things.
You
guys know what to do. Yeah, that's right. listen to Overdrive every weekday for the Upper Deck Leafs lineup player of the day. On Friday this week, we're giving away tickets to see Leafs Wings March 24th at the ACC. The theme this week, former Leafs who once played for Scotty Bowman. Today's Maple Leaf lineup player of the day is Tom Barrasso. Tom Barrasso. The Upper Deck Leafs lineup is brought to you by Upper Deck Team Triples, available at ZephyrEpic.com. Are the Raps legit Eastern finalists?
Tom Barrasso had a funny nickname.
Yes, he did.
Sounds a lot like Barrasso.
DeMar DeRozan, is he legitimately in the MVP race? Michael Wilbon from PTI and ESPN. He'll join us. We'll get into that next. We're on when PTI comes on. It's on every day on TSN up here in Canada, obviously on ESPN down in the States. And I PVR it. I go home. I generally watch it at night. And I'm always intrigued to see if the Raptors are going to come up at all. There's a lot of different things going on in the sports world. But the Raptors, the first team in the NBA to clinch a playoff spot. First overall in the East. Best home record in the East. Top five in the NBA in both offensive and defensive efficiency. DeMar DeRozan's been a stud. Kyle's been a stud. Best bench in the East, maybe in the NBA. And my understanding is Kornheiser and Wilbon got into the Raptors earlier this afternoon. So the Raptors came up on the show. And I don't think Tony's a believer, but we've got Michael Wilbon on the line from PTI and from ESPN, and we appreciate you doing this. And I guess I'll put you on the spot. Are you a believer in the Raptors, Michael?
I'm becoming that. Listen, in the NBA, the only way you can make a believer out of people wholesale is to win in the playoffs. That's just the way that league is. It's not like the other sports in North America. You know, you have to have some championship medal. And the Raptors are in the same, much same position as the Rockets. You know, people say, well, do you believe in the Rockets? Well, not really, because the last time we saw the Rockets as deep in the playoffs as they could get in the conference finals, James Harden was, like, looking for his mouthpiece on the floor. And that's not going to create a lot of confidence. So the Raptors and the Rockets, I think, are in pretty much the same situation. They're fighting against two champions, LeBron in the East, maybe the Celtics, but probably LeBron, even though they don't look like champions right now. And obviously Golden State in the West for the Rockets. And it's a shame that, you know, this big Friday night showdown, which I can't wait to see, it comes in the middle of March Madness in the U.S. I mean, that's what most people are paying attention here. They're going to have much higher ratings for college games this weekend than they are probably for that game. I got more than one TV in my house, so I'm going to watch Raptors and Rockets as well. But I'm just saying, you know, they both get this big showcase and the big stage, and they got to go up against the college boys that night.
You know, Michael, it's interesting. We were talking a little bit earlier, and it's fine. I'm with you on this. I mean, you know, the reason people don't really believe is because they've given you no reason to believe up to this point based on performance in the playoffs. But, you know, back to that, and Brian and I were talking earlier about that OKC team with Durant, Westbrook, and Harden. Is there it seemed that with those three guys, that there should have been some more postseason traction. And I know they lost in the finals, but is there a reason that there are reasons that they didn't find that with those trio? That, I mean, we're talking about magnificent players.
Well, they only played a couple of years together, and when you got a small market like Oklahoma City, which is, I don't know, it's got to be one of the smallest markets in North American sport, then you've got to look out at expenses. And they didn't think they could afford to keep all those guys. They didn't think they could keep them as people became free agents. And they decided to let Harden go and try to do his best they could. They should have been in the finals again without Harden, but Durant and Westbrook 2 years ago when they were up 3-1 on Golden State, They failed. So they had a number of cracks at it. Yes, they lost to LeBron in the finals once. They lost to San Antonio. They lost to some pretty darn good teams. I mean, you lose to the Spurs, Rockets, Spurs and Warriors. You lose into the eventual champion teams, talk with Hall of Famers. So I don't know that I want to blame OKC. They had like 3-4 cracks at it and didn't work. But you know, you're right about the initial part of that question. In that league, you got to show me. You've got to show me that you can get through to the conference finals multiple times or to the finals. And even Chris Paul, as great as he is, he's had some fabulous games 5, 6, 7 in earlier rounds. He hasn't gotten to the finals. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if he and Harden, you know, Harden's been there once, if those guys have what it takes to get past Golden State.
With Michael Wilbon from PTI and ESPN here on Overdrive, there was a report that came out, courtesy, I believe, a Bleacher Report earlier today, that LeBron James is looking at 4 different teams that he could end up signing with this upcoming summer. And those teams, reportedly, are the Cavs, Philly, Houston, and the Lakers. But I've been down this road so many times, I know you have as well, Michael, and you're much more connected than we are, but I don't think any of these reports ever hold any weight. I mean, what do we really know about what LeBron is going to do in July?
I believe that LeBron doesn't know what he's going to do in July. That's why it doesn't hold much weight with me either. So I think you and I are on the same page there. I think that there are some teams we can rule out, you know, and I think there's some teams that you know are in place simply because, you know, LeBron's fascination and what he's looking forward to in his future. You know, it's interesting. 3 years ago, I sat with Kobe Bryant toward the end of his career, his basketball life, and Kobe talked about what he wanted to do, and he had this really sharp, unbelievably clear vision of what he wanted to do in sort of the movie industry, the storytelling business, as I call it. And he sat talking about it. And I remember people telling me then, oh, do you think he really knows what he wants to do? Yeah. I was convinced in that conversation Kobe knew what he wanted to do, and now the irony of it, he wins an Academy Award, you know, pursuing just that second career. Well, LeBron, I believe, and I've talked to him, I believe when he says, I don't know, I haven't decided, I don't know what I want to do, and people don't want to take athletes at their word, they want to take it's all figured out, they want to presume that it isn't all figured out. I take him at his word that he hasn't figured it out, that he hasn't even dealt with it in the kind of way. So I think he does a general notion of where he might want to go. Yes. Are there 4 or 5 teams in that at least? Are there 2 or 3 cities in that? Yeah, probably at least. But I don't think he knows yet or has to know. Suppose, and I'll give you the ultimate example to me. Suppose this trade has produced exactly the kind of team he wants to play for a couple more years. Why would he leave Cleveland? Now, I guess there are some reasons. Maybe he and the owner don't get along well enough anymore for him to want to stay. I'm not sure about that. But I think that a lot of these things have to get answered through competition, the human drama of athletic competition, before a guy like LeBron can say for certain, okay, here's what I want to do next. And so it's fun to guess. Of course it's fun.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that anybody has any inside track on knowing what he wants to do.
With Michael Wilbon on Twitter, you can follow him at Real Mike Wilbon on Instagram at Real Mike Wilbon. I found it interesting, again, because we don't really know, and it's just a narrative, and it's talks, and it leads to takes, and everyone's got them. Everyone's got an opinion on this, and LeBron has supplied it more than any other athlete over the past decade that I can think of. But this idea that him going to Houston would somehow be unbecoming of him, and he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't jump on a moving train that's going on that pace, where I don't see much of a difference between that move, if it were to happen, him joining Harden and Chris Paul in a 60-win team and a team that will be competing for an NBA title, and what he did with Miami, where he joined a Miami team where Dwayne Wade at that point was a top 5 player in the world and Chris Bosh was a perennial All-Star. I mean, how much different would that really be?
Not much. Not much.
No.
The only difference there is, man, how many guys need the ball? I mean, we knew Dwayne Wade had played his entire life in both capacities, right? He had played without the ball when Shaq needed it, right, when they won in Miami back in the aughts. And then we knew Dwayne Wade could play with the ball or without it. I mean, Harden and Chris Paul have already made incredible sacrifice for this to work. And so maybe they make room for one more guy, I guess. I don't really get the reason he would do that to me is if he wants so desperately to beat Golden State and he's looking at who he can link up with to do that. If he just doesn't want to go out being the preeminent player of his generation, losing 3 or 4 times and watching Golden State win more championships, that is something that the preeminent players of their time did not have to have. And Kobe and Shaq didn't have that. They didn't look around at somebody else who had won more times. Well, I guess San Antonio. But San Antonio added a couple of those after those guys were sort of moving on. Jordan didn't have to have that. Magic didn't have to have that. LeBron would have to, and I don't know whether that matters to him. I'm not asking that question. But it would, if he is just burning, yearning to say, hell no, I can't abide this Golden State thing, then you go and you hook up with whomever you think can best be positioned to beat Golden State. But I don't know that he lives like that. That's sort of the Michael Jordan model, if you will, where Jordan winning was the only thing with him. I don't know if LeBron, he doesn't seem to have quite that personality. And but the Houston thing to me is just sort of a yawner. If he goes to Houston, the Lakers situation, I think the Lakers with the players they have as their nucleus, including, yes, you know, Ball, I think that those guys are as good as the talent he's got in Cleveland right now collectively. When you look down the road at Ingram and Kuzma and all those guys, I mean, I love what the Lakers are putting together. And I think they could I think that could really be interesting in that same division with Golden State. Not maybe not the first year, but the second year those guys are together.
Does LeBron end up at a point, and I know it's speculation, where being around a young group of players that know who he is and are can carry a lot of significant play, does that something that would appeal to LeBron in the way you know him?
I you know what? That's what he's got now. You know, he's got, and George Hill's not a young player, but, you know, I mean, you know, you've got Larry Nance Jr., you've got Rodney Hood. Those are young players. And they're, look, and I talked to Larry Nance Jr., and I know how excited he was about joining them. And an interesting thing that LeBron said 2 weeks ago, I guess the last time that I talked to him, he was saying that he thought it was incumbent upon him as the leader and the old guy, the veteran on that team, to keep those guys as excited as they were when they walked in the door. I thought that was very, you know, one of the things LeBron doesn't get nearly enough credit for is his ability to read people, his intellect in these areas. And I thought that that was really important. And we could see it last night in the game at Denver where, you know, they were sort of listening a little bit and LeBron understood, you know, they needed him to be LeBron James and be in awe of that, if you will. But I don't know. I mean, I think the Laker nucleus is a lot better than a lot of people do, and they're playing like it right now. Now, they wouldn't have Isaiah Thomas, presumably, come next year if LeBron and others go there. But, wow, I mean, what a group they've got, you know, with Ingram and Kuzma. I mean, and, you know, they've got four. And Lonzo Ball, who a lot of people like to take a shot at because his shot is ugly. I mean, Lonzo Ball threw a huge stretch of the season averaging like 10.5 points, 7 and 7. Well, how many rookies average 10.5, 7 and 7? You know, people talk about the process in Philly. Hell, all their rookies redshirt at least 1 year, maybe two.
Yeah. Right.
You know, Lonzo Ball's out there playing now and taking his lumps, you know, and he has some moments where you'd like for him to do things differently or a little better, but he's a true rookie. You know, some of these teams, again, Philly notably, everybody redshirts a year or two, and they talk about how great the process has gone. Well, the Lakers' process seems to be going pretty well. And, again, if you had Paul George and LeBron to that, I mean, how excited should they all be? Not just LeBron, but how excited would they all be at that?
This is so crazy.
How excited would Toronto be at getting LeBron out of the East?
Oh, totally. That's what it comes down to. I mean, let's be honest, LeBron, out of all of these different conversations and what the Raptors have done during the regular season, what they've done during the playoffs, what's going on in Boston when Wall returns in Washington, what's happening in Milwaukee, Philly, the stopper from all conversations in the East is LeBron's been to 7 straight NBA Finals.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Well, and can he make it 8 by rallying this team, you know, fairly quickly? You know, 18, 19 games left, whatever it is. That was a big first step of a start to a 6-game road trip last night, winning in Denver. And I know the Nuggets were playing on a back-to-back and all that, but I thought that was huge. I just think, I was one of the people, I'm still one of the people, who thinks that Toronto ought to, I mean, the Raptors just can't let LeBron, looking at this from Toronto's point of view now, not from any other point of view, if I'm the Raptors, and I've been a veteran team, I've had this group together for a little while, I think I'm pretty darn good. DeMar DeRozan, to me, and I do vote, DeMar DeRozan is maybe on the first team, maybe first team All-NBA. You know, you can't just let Cleveland walk in, change the team overnight, and just take the East. I mean, that would not speak well of Toronto if the Raptors, you know, can't handle them this time around. If it comes to that, somebody could beat Cleveland, perhaps, even sooner than Toronto gets to them. But, I mean, they ought to be looking at it as this is our time. And I've certainly been looking at it as Toronto has surpassed Boston, what is it, 2.5 games ahead of the Celtics right now. I mean, to me, if I'm Toronto, I'm thinking I'm the favorite. And if he's going to beat us with a bunch of guys he hasn't played a playoff game with yet, shame on us. And I think that's the way the Raptors ought to feel about this.
He is Michael Wilbon from PTI and ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter, @RealMikeWilbon, on Instagram, @RealMikeWilbon, and Facebook.com/RealMichaelWilbon. It's a lot of places you can find him.
Too many places.
Yeah, that's right. And you can find him up here on TSN every day, Monday through Friday at 5:30. Great catching up with you, Michael. Appreciate you doing this, man.
All right, you guys. You're quite welcome. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
There he is. Michael Wilbon from PTI. starting to become a bit of a believer with the Raptors. But, you know.
I like what he says, though. I like, you know, when he was saying it, I felt the same way watching Germany at the Olympics in the men's hockey. You know, why would you believe in Germany? They've never given you a reason to believe in them. Ever.
Right, exactly.
Like, and okay, so I know it's 1-0 after the first period, and I know it's 1-1 after the second period. I know it's the gold medal game, and but they still haven't given me a reason to believe.
No.
I guess you got to go, it could happen, but this,
you got to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I'll use a Canadian basketball example. The national team has never done anything. Like, and they've got all this young talent that's coming up, and young players, sometimes they play, sometimes they don't play. Until they actually prove it, and I'm not even saying they go out there and beat the States, beat Brazil, beat Spain, beat Argentina. Yeah. Until you do it, I don't care what you have on paper.
Yeah, so
I don't care what you do in tune-up games or in camp. Because make no mistake, the NBA regular season for the top-end teams, and the Raptors are a part of that, it's 82 tune-up games for the playoffs. That's what it is. We knew the Raptors were going to win 50 games plus this year and go to the playoffs. We knew it before the season started. We knew Cleveland was going to do that. Boston was going to do it. Golden State, Houston. So 82 tune-up games. And it's they don't mean anything if you get into the playoffs and you can't overcome these teams that are waiting for you. So thank you again to Michael Wilbon for joining us. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine and recap a busy afternoon. Craig Button in here. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I called my shot last night, picked a winner as well, Craig, so feeling it this afternoon.
Well, Scotty MacArthur and I, the other night, I went against him, and I was right.
He was wrong. Yeah, don't let Scotty get in your head.
No, he doesn't, but I didn't like his pick of Tampa Bay losing at home to Florida.
Well, they almost lost at home.
Almost isn't the best.
Right, that's true. I'm looking at the basketball board tonight. I'm taking Miami plus points at home against Philly. Same thing with Minnesota. I know Jimmy Butler's out, but Boston's been up and down recently. And I'm going to lay 11.5 points against the Spurs. I can't imagine I've ever done this before, but it's Golden State at home, and I think they're going to make this a statement game. And San Antonio's reeling right now. Throw down 20 and you can score 100. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. All right, Craig, thanks for doing this, man. We're going to see a lot, I think, next week, right?
Yeah, Monday, back Monday.
Okay.
Looking forward to it. It's fun.
Jonas will be in here tomorrow, I believe, and O-Dog will be back tomorrow.
Jonas is coming in, yeah.
Jonas will be in here.
Yeah, well,
all right, buddy.
You going to practice trivia?
Probably. It's a Friday. We'll have some trivia tomorrow. Yeah. We're out of here. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.